And Kevin Costley, how old are you, Kevin?
23.
And you're are you from here originally? Grew up here?
Grew up here, born and raised in Champaign, Illinois, right here.
Okay. And you were down, you were living down in New Orleans?
Yes, I was going to get my master's at Southern University of New Orleans. My final year, getting my master's in social work.
Okay, so were you living on campus or near the campus there?
Actually, I was living in an apartment. That particular university doesn't have on-campus housing. They have all off-campus near the lakefront. It's the attraction of the school.
Okay, and first of all, you're getting your master's there. Where did you go as an undergrad?
Undergrad, I went to Millikan University right in Decatur, Illinois. Okay. Small private school.
And so you were living on the lakefront. Wait, not the Gulf, not on the ocean front, but not on the Gulf, but what's the lake out there?
Lake Pontchartrain. It's the lake that sits north of New Orleans and south of Covington, Mandeville, and Slidell area.
So how far were you from the lakefront where you were living?
How far? I'm less than 5 minutes. I'm maybe about 10 blocks from the lakefront.
Okay. So how was that place? Well, I guess first thing I'm wondering, when did you leave? Did you leave when the city called on people to evacuate, or did you stay on a little?
I was there throughout the whole thing, through the whole process. I seen when the storm came through, the after effects. I did not leave until 2 days after, after the storm hit and the flooding started began. I didn't leave when our resources got low and we began to wane on our, how confident we were as far as staying. That is when we decided to leave.
Why did you decide not to leave earlier? Why did you stay?
This is my first time ever going through a hurricane, and I wasn't aware of the effects that a hurricane, a Category 5 hurricane, would do to New Orleans. I've heard it, and I thought, the news reports were accurate. They say we're going to make a shift, so I figured, I'd try to, do some little, adjusting, analyzing myself. Say, okay, it's going to move, it's shifting towards the east, and it's going to hit Slidell, so we won't be affected as much. Therefore, I decided to stay and, and tough it out. But that decision proved to be, not a wise one.
What was it like being through the storm itself?
That's kind of indescribable. Just, coming from Illinois, you don't get that much wind. And, you go to Chicago and you might experience it. But being in the eye or being in a storm, a hurricane of that magnitude, it's almost exciting. It's like, exhilarating. You it's like an adrenaline rush. You're getting all that wind and that power and such force of nature just storming through the city. It's an adrenaline rush, and on the other hand, you're afraid for your life. So you got this catch 22. It's two things clashing.
Where were you during the storm itself? Were you in your apartment, down someplace else in the building, some other building?
During the storm, I was at an apartment of a friend of my other family's. My aunt's boyfriend is actually a resident of New Orleans. He was born and raised in New Orleans, and I was going to actually stay at my apartment, which is a one-story. It's on the ground level. He came and picked me up and took me to his apartment, which is a second-floor apartment, which sits pretty high off the ground.
Okay, and that's where you rode out the storm?
That's where I tried to ride out the storm. The water started, coming up, getting high at that apartment. The ceiling at his apartment began to cave in, and we started to get maybe an inch or two of water in the home.
Now, when the water coming in, was that just water from the storm, water from Lake Pontchartrain flooding, or something else?
Both. We got a lot of rain from the hurricane, the water from push from the Gulf of Mexico. However, as all that water began to flow in, Lake Pontchartrain began to spill over, so we got a mixture of the water from the hurricane, Lake Pontchartrain, the Gulf of Mexico, all the surrounding body of the waters that New Orleans has around it, we got it.
Okay, so help orient me here now. What day is it when all this is happening?
The storm hit, I want to say the storm hit Monday morning around maybe sometime 6.
Six
in the morning or so. And that whole time frame, we began to get wind around Sunday evening, late Sunday night. I remember we were still watching TV around that time. But the storm hit with a lot of force on early Monday morning.
Okay, so was it just you and your aunt's boyfriend in that apartment at that point?
Yeah, at that point it was just me and my aunt's boyfriend. Us, we had nothing else except a bunch of candles and magazines to read, and cans of Spam and tuna fish and whatnot. That's about it.
And as the water started getting closer, and you're saying the roof was being threatened as well, what did you do then?
Well, when the roof came in, caved in, and you know,
caved in.
Yeah, it started coming down.
The, and that was all, the roof right above you. You were on the top floor.
Yes, we were on the roof. Yes, on the top floor. The beak started to crash down, come down the drywall, plaster broke off, and wood started to come. Once we did that, we moved all our belongings into a center room where the roof was still stable and the structure, the infrastructure of the home was still intact. We got in there and just rolled a storm out for a couple of days until we decided we want to leave.
Now, at that point, was the building surrounded by water?
Oh, yeah. Everything was surrounded by water. The whole city is surrounded by water.
So at that point, for instance, once the storm died down, it wouldn't have been a matter of just opening the door and walking on out, would it?
No.
How deep was the water?
Well, I'm 6'4", and the water was up to my chest. So I must say that the water was at least 5 feet, 11 inches, maybe more. And it was definitely deep. Once we stepped out and got and coming out of the apartment, out of the second floor apartment, the water was fairly, it wasn't bad. It was like maybe 4 feet, you know, still walkable and still, you know, we could walk around and manage to get around and move. However, as we got onto the main street from the, is a, his apartment building is in the back of a, like in the back of the building or whatever. So we'd come down and we'd walk around. And once we get to the street level, the water began to increase. And that's when it got to its peak, and then we moved into the main streets, and it got higher and higher.
So we're talking what day of the week now that you're actually trying walking out there?
Well, Monday, after everything calmed down, maybe about Monday at, I want to say about 6 p.m., when the eye of the storm had moved over and it started making its way into Mississippi, we walked out the house, and we encountered an older man who couldn't walk, and he was passed up by a few members of the New Orleans Fire Department, and we carried him to safety. So it was about Monday at 6 o'clock, that's when we started moving around and really, you know, seeing what damage the hurricane had done to the city.
Was everything in the immediate vicinity totally flooded, or was there any walkable areas of ground like that, like the old man you were talking about? Where did you find him?
Well, to answer your first question, there were no walkable areas in New Orleans in the section we were at. We had heard reports that on certain parts of the town that there was, you know, a woman could step outside and she could see, you know, in either direction. There was dryness. However, in the section of town we were in, which is mid-city, I don't know if you're familiar with New Orleans, but it's towards the Garden District or whatever. Well, I mean, a little further up from the Garden District.
Is that the area you were in was near the Garden District?
No, that's Uptown. I meant to say Uptown is the Garden District. We were in mid-city, near City Park and LSU Medical School, whatnot.
So that's your apartment and your aunt's boyfriend's apartment?
That's my aunt's boyfriend's apartment.
What would be in mid-city,
yes.
And not necessarily near Lake Pontchartrain?
No, my apartment is near Lake Pontchartrain.
Okay.
That everything was flooded, completely flooded. When we seen the gentleman, he was maybe, I say, 8 blocks up from where my aunt's boyfriend lived at. And he was walking. He was, yes, he was 60. Well, he wasn't walking. You know, he was trying to get around as best he could. He had a float on. Keep in mind, he was 300 pounds, so it was very hard for him to move around with all that weight, and all he had was a life vest. So it was very extremely hard for him to move and get where he needed to go. So we tried to, first we were walking with him, and we were going to, you know, try to get him to safety through walking. But eventually his legs started giving out, and he couldn't make it, and he wanted to sit. And he was like, well, you know, you can just drop me off, and I'll be fine. And we couldn't do that. We couldn't allow him to do that because the walk that he wanted to make, he would have never got there. So we got put our minds together, and we came up with a plan to get a raft. We built out of a piece of wood, scrap wood off of someone's fence that had been blown over, and two tires that were floating around, and we carried him to safety.
On this sort of improvised raft.
Oh, yeah, improvised. You know, we watched MacGyver and whatnot, and we kind of put our minds together. Like, my aunt's boyfriend, he's actually an ex-military guy, so he has some knowledge of, you know, just basic survival. And I watch MacGyver, and I watch History Channel and see, you know, what people have done or whatever just to survive. And we came up with that plan, building a raft, and got ourselves out of there. We helped that guy to safety and the other family that we helped to safety.
Tell me about the other family. And what day is it now?
This is all on Monday. Yes. The other family we helped, after we had got the guy, we took the guy to safety on Tulane Avenue to the city building. There was a family that we seen maybe 5-6 blocks up from the you know, where we dropped the guy off, and they were screaming and yelling, like, you know, help, help, we need help, nobody's coming to get us, we have no food, no lights, and the water was in their home, like, from the street. So we told them, you know, just bear with us a second, let us drop this guy off, and we'll come back and get you, because the guy, there's no way the whole family would have fit on the raft with the guy. He was a very heavy-set guy, about, as I stated, about 300 pounds. And the family, it was a family of six. So, you know, it would have been a real hard time trying to get everybody on the raft. But not to, you know, drift off. We took the older man to safety, came back and got the family, made sure they were intact. You know, it's three young girls. None of the young girls could swim. The wife, the woman, she was kind of a, you know, heaviest, big-boned woman. So she needed a lot of assistance. And her husband, he was old, kind of older man, so he definitely needed some help. So we put all the whole family on a raft, and we got him out. And there was another young gentleman that was there, too, who just so happened to be, you know, walking and got caught by the water. And he went and stopped by the house for safety, and we got him on a raft as well.
When you're talking about getting people to safety, where are you taking them in all this flooded area?
We're taking them to high ground, the highest ground possible. And
the highest ground that's not flooded, or just not as flooded?
Not flooded. Well, not as flooded, I should say. Tulane Avenue, it was flooded, but there was the building, the city building. They had stairs that went up, and it got you to about definitely a higher elevation than any other house in New Orleans would have been. So they got there, and we got them to safety, high ground, where there was some food and some shelter and clothing. And people had, you know, the means to get out of New Orleans if they felt so.
At the city building?
At the city building.
Okay. Meanwhile, you and your aunt's boyfriend, how long did you stay there?
At the city building?
Well, I'd say in town. I mean, what did you try to do from there, since it didn't look like staying in the apartment was much of an option?
Well, actually, the first night after we rescued everybody, I was kind of concerned about walking back, because I had heard reports that I talked to my mother right before we lost kind of all communication, and she said, well, there have been reports that alligators and reptiles were in the water, and you know a lot of bad things from the Gulf and, you know, Lake Pontchartrain. I informed Leonard, my aunt's boyfriend, that I felt it was best that we stayed at the shelter. However, he felt like he wanted to go back and be in his apartment in the comfort of his home, because he was afraid of the looting. So we walked back Monday evening. Tuesday, the next morning, we woke up approximately about 12:30, and really tired from the night before, helping a lot of people.
That's 12:30 midday?
Yeah, midday in the afternoon. We decided that, you know, we were going to go out and try to help some other people. We helped some other people that day till about 5, and we came back home, rested up, and then I told him, we put our heads together and made the decision to leave.
Now, you said there was was the shelter in the city building?
The shelter, yeah, exactly. It was in the shelter in the city building.
And the city building, the shelter didn't seem like an option to you?
It was definitely an option to me. But to my aunt's friend, he just felt more comfortable going back to his apartment. And I didn't feel comfortable being without him. And likewise, you know, we were going, whatever decision that was going to be made, we were going to do it together. We weren't going to leave each other. We just felt it was best that we stayed together. You know, we separated to make it a lot. The process of us getting out of New Orleans would have been a lot harder.
So that's at that point, the two of you together decided just to leave the city.
On Monday, we decided to go back to the apartment. Then on Tuesday, we decided that it was best for us to leave the city. That was a little, you know, we were a little hesitant, you know, on both sides. You know, I try to be strong and say, you know, my friend was like, you know, how you feel about it? You know, are you B positive? I said, man, I'm A positive. Got to get out of here. You know, resources are running real low. It's just time for us to leave. And
I'm sorry. I just want to. I want to get it in my head. Leonard, what's his last name? Your aunt's
Brumfield.
Brumfield. Okay. And he lives in New Orleans. He's a permanent resident.
Yes, he's born and raised in New Orleans.
Okay. So you've both decided to leave the city. Where were you planning on going?
You know, the plan was up in the air. I had the bright idea. I was like, you know, if we can just get out of New Orleans and we can get to the highway, I-10, and from I-10 we can hitchhike or something, you know, or get to Jackson, Mississippi. I have a brother that goes to college in Jackson, and I knew from Jackson there was a possibility of us getting back to Champaign. However, we ended up getting to the I-10, but at Causeway Boulevard after we walked to the intersection. There were emergency medical services and all the rescue agents were there, and they weren't allowing people to go further. They were taking people to Baton Rouge, Houma, Thibodaux, and some other surrounding cities that didn't get hit as bad. You know, they weren't flooding, and there were shelters available with food, water, and clothing.
So what happened then? And now we're talking, it's still Tuesday?
This is early Wednesday morning. After we made the walk, we left on Tuesday evening. Once we decided to leave, we left New Orleans about 6 o'clock, 6 p.m.
How long did it take you to get out of flooded territory?
Out of flooded territory, it took us about 2.5 hours.
So you were slogging through water for 2.5 hours?
2 hours till about 8 p.m., 8 or 9. Then we got to the railroad tracks. And once we got to the railroad tracks ironically weren't flooded. And they weren't, you know, were just as low as the highway. And
that's interesting. You're saying the railroad tracks, are those the tracks that Amtrak comes in on?
No, I think U.S. Railway runs through those tracks. Amtrak, they run closer towards the uptown, towards the Superdome and area of New Orleans.
So are they flooded? Because I know the train going down there from here is stopping at Memphis now.
Yeah, I'm assuming they're flooded. I haven't had any contact these last few days. I've been resting up and just getting myself my bearings back, you know, from being, I've been such out of sync, so I couldn't tell you, like, you know, what's really going on right now at this point.
So you say you were stopped by law enforcement folks, and they were going to send you to the shelters in Baton Rouge and Thibodaux and places like that.
Once we got to Causeway Boulevard, there were the law enforcement and the EMS services wanted to, they were going to take us, you know, to certain shelters. We had options of Houma, Thibodaux, Baton Rouge, and a couple other places. I'm not really sure. I can't think of the other names. Houma and Thibodaux, I know for a fact, you know, we wouldn't be able to get out of there and be able to get to Eleanor or get to, you know, familiar faces and family at those places. So we contacted a police officer and told him, look, you know, we got a place to go. We just need to get to the right place, and we told him we need to go to Baton Rouge, and he allowed us to get on the bus and go.
So you went on the bus to Baton Rouge.
Yes, and that was about an hour and a half ride. We got to Baton Rouge possibly about 2 o'clock, 2:30, and once we got to Baton Rouge, we were bused to LSU, and they were going to have us all sleeping outside in front of LSU's gym. However, the space at LSU's gym just began to fill up so rapid, at a rapid pace. And once, you know, they seen that they couldn't hold any more people outside without, you know, the ordinances being violated, they bussed us to the Civic Center, Baton Rouge Civic Center in the riverfront. And once we got there, we stayed there for about maybe a few hours, a couple hours, didn't sleep. They gave us food, you know, the meals already prepared, and they were, I think those are the Army meals that they eat in, you know, overseas right now. And they gave us clothing. Once we did that, we rested, you know, we got our bearings back while in Baton Rouge, and then we got up at 6 o'clock in the morning and walked to the bus station in Baton Rouge, which is about maybe 2 miles from where we were at. And once the bus station there was closed because of the roads, they couldn't get to New Orleans or 55 because 55 is shut down.
And 55 would have been their route north.
Yes, exactly.
So they couldn't even go north from that.
Exactly. So our only method of getting out was by plane.
So you flew out of Baton Rouge?
Yes.
We flew to
Memphis, Tennessee. And from Memphis, Tennessee, we flew to Indianapolis. I was kind of hesitant, you know, to fly because the price was so high. It was $531. And I really felt like that was just an astronomical price for a one-way ticket. You know, concerning what we've been through. But Leonard Brumfield, he put things in perspective, and he kind of, you know, brought it back to life. Like, you know, $500 is nothing, you know, when you're thinking about your life, you know, the life you could have lost, and, you know, the people that are in New Orleans and they can't make it out now. So I was just grateful that, you know, we had somebody that was able to you know, put the money up and allow us to get back.
So you made it up to Indianapolis, and from Indianapolis you drove back, or what?
Right over to Champaign. Somebody came and picked us up from Indianapolis Airport right on time, and they took us back on to Champaign.
And so you made it in the Champaign when?
We made it to Champaign Tuesday evening, maybe about 7 o'clock, 6 or 7.
Okay. I'm assuming that your own apartment down there is pretty much lost for the immediate future.
at this point, from all the reports that I've heard, you know, the preliminary reports, everything in most of the things in New Orleans East, which includes my apartment area and other surrounding areas, is totally damaged.
And the campus?
The campus is gone. It was it's in an area called Press Park, and I was told that Press Park is extremely flooded.
Okay, I had heard about. I remember reading about Tulane in the news because my mom went there, so I had that in mind. It's same problem, I think.
Tulane is uptown, and Tulane got a bit of the flooding, but after a while, the flooding began to go down in that part of New Orleans in the uptown area, just because the aqueducts and the I can't even think of the name right now. The water, the things, the structures that block the water.
The levee.
The levee. Thank you. The levees were held up in that section of town. And some sections of the main part of New Orleans and the section I was in, those levees collapsed, including the 17th Street levee and the London Bridge. All those collapsed.
Now, when you were slogging your way out, you and Leonard Brumfield, I guess from Mid-City onto I-10, which would be what side of New Orleans would that be on?
Which way?
Well, where the police stopped you.
That's in another section of New Orleans. It's in a town called Metairie, which is in another parish.
Yeah.
So we walk from Orleans Parish to Jefferson Parish, which is about 20 miles. It's a good 15-minute ride in a car, going about 70 miles an hour or 60 miles. You know.
So were you walking through water most of this time?
Actually, no. We were walking on the railroad tracks. After we got out the water, about 2 hours walking through the water, we made it to the railroad tracks. And once we hit the railroad tracks, there wasn't any water. It was all dry. It was just rocks and, you know, gravel and trees down and, you know, stray dogs and, you know, things damaged by the wind.
Okay. And but below the tracks, was there still flooding? Was Metairie flooded?
Definitely. Well, once we got to Metairie, it wasn't flooded. As I stated, the levee, the 17th Street levee broke. So all the water that was in Metairie spilled over. And it began to make its way back into Orleans Parish. And the other part, the parts of Metairie that were, you know, right bordering on the line of Orleans.
Okay.
Therefore, there wasn't any water once we got to Metairie. Once we hit the causeway, we got past the West End Bridge and past Bonneville Avenue, which is like your first, you know, major intersection when you're going into Metairie. Wasn't any water.
Did you see anything on the walk out where, and especially think of all the news accounts which are concentrating some of the most horrific things in people's imaginations. Did you see how people were coping around you as you were trying to leave the city?
I definitely seen a lot of looting.
You saw it going on?
Yes, we definitely seen looting going on. The looting, from one perspective, you know, it can be seen as, you know, just, you know, terrible and why were people doing this. But, you know, this is New Orleans, I'm sure, as a lot of people know, it's a really impoverished, you know, city. You know, half of the people in New Orleans live below the poverty line. And once the hurricane hit, people didn't have anything, you know. And so these people weren't, you know, looting just to be looting. They were looting out of necessity, out of, you know, my family needs food. My family needs clothes. My family needs shoes. The individuals that we helped, the gentlemen and the family, none of these people had shoes or dry clothes. You know, of course they wouldn't be dry because everything's wet, but, you know, these people, they don't have shoes. You know, who God knows, only knows what we were walking on. You know, and so we definitely seen looting, seen caskets floating.
That's from, like, from the cemeteries, from the above-ground cemeteries?
Above-ground cemeteries. We definitely seen several caskets floating. Thank God I didn't see any bodies. You know, we didn't, you know, the caskets were either tipped over on the back or whatever, or on front closed. We didn't see any animals, thank God again. We did get shot at, which is a
Tell me about that.
Oh man, on the way out, we were leaving and we didn't know what direction to go in. As I stated, we were treading through the water. And there was a gentleman, he was doing the same thing, trying to make his way to safety, but it's completely dark. And he heard things moving in the water, and I'm quite sure he didn't know what was going on, so he shot off 3 rounds in the air. And once we were startled, the the gunfire looked like it was at a distance. However, once we flashed a light on him, he was very close, maybe two arms lengths from me.
And he was reacting to hearing your movements and not knowing what it was.
Exactly. He was reacting just, on his senses. You know, he heard water, he felt the water treading and heard us moving and, the little talk we had. And he didn't know what was going on. He was reacting out of fear. Shot three rounds. And luckily, he wasn't pointing him in any, random in the direction of an individual. Because if he would have been pointing in a certain direction, we might not be here talking to you today. I might not be talking to you on this microphone.
What happened after you shined the light on him?
After he shined the light on him, we were like, hey, we're trying to get out. We're trying to get to safety, put your gun down. And, he was like, hey, all right, I'm just trying to, I'm protecting myself. And we asked him, like, look, man, we want to go in a certain direction. Can we go that way? He told us if we were to go the direction we were going to go, we wouldn't be living. It was 15 feet of water, and you wouldn't be able to feel the drop-off because it's such a steep drop-off. Once you walk further down on Broad Street, there's a street called AP Turod in some French term. I can't really pronounce it. However, at that point, the street would be a rapid drop-off. And at that rapid drop-off, the water level increases to, like, maybe 15 feet. And from there, like, Leonard, he couldn't swim. So, it would be two people. I can swim, a little bit. But it would have been me, carrying him, a 200-pound man with a 40-pound bag on his back through 15 feet of water. And he actually told us, after we asked him, explained him what we were trying to do, he talked to us and told us direction to go, and he directed us to the railroad tracks. And once we got to the railroad tracks, we walked like 20 minutes in the wrong direction to the railroad split. And we were torn. We didn't know what was going on. Our sense of orientation was just really tore off, like messed up, completely out of whack. And by the grace of God, we seen two individuals who had already walked from Metairie to New Orleans, where we were at, trying to find their parents and get to a boat. And once they got to a certain part of where we were at, they found that they couldn't make it. The water was too high. So they were going to turn back around and walk to Metairie and tell the emergency medical services to, what they were trying to do, and their mother's trapped in the attic of a building, and they need to get her out.
Mm-hmm. Wanted to backtrack a bit, make sure I had it in my mind. The guy who fired the warning shots at you, was he in the water too, or was he up?
No, he was in the water. He was treading through the water as well.
Okay. What are you going to do now? It's not like you can just hop, take a train back down and go back to school next week.
You know what? Right now I'm just trying to, process everything, and just count my blessings. I'm truly blessed. I feel good. I've been on the high for the last 2 days. It's kind of bittersweet, but I'm so glad to be alive, and I'm just every day I'm thanking God. Like, I could still be in New Orleans. So school and what am I going to do is an afterthought at this point. I've been told, a lot of people have contacted me and told me that the U of I is willing to take myself in. Illinois State has contacted me as well. At this point, I just, I'm going to process things, and then maybe within the weekend and, at the beginning of the next week, following week, I'll be able to make headway to, getting back on my feet and, starting a new life, I guess.
Have you heard about, or are you worried about, other relatives, friends who were down there at the time?
I'm definitely worried about. I got a lot of friends. I made a lot of friends while in school, and just through my experiences in New Orleans. And I'm definitely worried about them. However, I can't contact them because the modes of communication are gone. They don't have access to internet unless they're in another city, another town, another state, and that's kind of hard because they're living in hotels and relatives. I do have a brother that's in Mississippi, in Jackson, Mississippi, and I'm extremely worried about him. He's one of my only two brothers that I have, so it'd be heart-wrenching to lose him. I've talked to him, I've communicated with him, and he's in a shelter and he's doing fine. He informed me that the power in Jackson, Mississippi should be back on within the week, and so I'm just I'm hoping and I'm praying that everything, he'll be able to keep his spirits up and make it through this whole situation as I did.
Now, was your aunt down there too? You had other relatives?
No, it was just myself. I'm the only person down there in New Orleans, like as far as my immediate family is concerned. Okay. Nobody else. Leonard Brumfield is the closest thing I have to family down there. And after this whole experience, he's like a brother, a father, you know.
Where is he now? Is he here in town?
Yes, he is. He's actually resting up as well. You know, this whole experience kind of drained us. So he's with my aunt at their home, you know, recuperating, getting rest and eating, getting fluids back in himself. He started to feel a little sick. He actually, he consumed some of the water, some of the contaminated water. As the guy shot at us, he went underwater. You know, we both kind of squatted down. He was because he's not, you know, the tallest guy in the world. When he squatted, he went underwater. So as I stated, he consumed some of the water, and so he hasn't been feeling well. On the bus ride to Baton Rouge, he complained of stomach pains and a headache. So it's been affecting him a little bit.
Okay. Well, listen, it certainly sounds like a real ordeal. Not the sort of thing a lot of people expect to have in their lifetimes.
Well, definitely. I definitely didn't expect to go through this experience. You know, I'm a small town guy, you know, from Champaign, Illinois. You know, we don't have natural disasters. We're not faced with natural disasters like this at all.
Occasional tornado.
Yeah, occasional tornado. But, it, you know, if it gets caught in Champaign, it's a valley and it'll leave. But, you know, I just never envisioned in my lifetime that I would, you know, experience something. It's so surreal. You know, I was explaining to somebody the other day that, you know, I've seen it on TV with the tsunami and, you know, hurricanes that hit, you know, Florida. And I see that and I'm like, you know, how did these people do it? You know, how did they survive? You know, and I look at it and see like, man, like, I wonder what it looks like. And now that I've gone through it, it's like, oh my God, like, I've been through a horrific event in U.S. history. And, you know, I'm lucky to survive.
Listen, thank you very much for talking with me.
Thank you. I just hope that, you know, everybody, I don't want to hold you up too much longer, but I hope that everybody knows, you know, can keep New Orleans in their prayer, and, you know, and if there are any efforts that can be done to, you know, help those people get out and get to safety, you know, at all possibilities, you know, exhaust those possibilities, because those people really need it, and it's going to really be, you know, bad. Things in New Orleans are going to be extremely bad for a long time, for a mighty long time, until they can get back on their feet. And it's going to take a while.